This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about go-to-market in calendar weeks 16 and 17. Frenis is a B2B market research partner, helping ICT and tech providers identify niche channel partners by compressing the full journey from identification to qualified first meeting into 4 to 5 weeks. You can find more info in the description.
Yeah, and having that kind of highly tactical resource is just huge right now, especially with how fast everything is shifting.
Oh, absolutely. So to kick things off for you listening today, I want you to imagine buying a $1 million state-of-the-art Ferrari engine.
Right, I'm tracking.
You take this incredible piece of machinery and you drop it into a 20-year-old rusty go-kart. You turn the key, and then you just sort of scratch your head wondering why you aren't winning the Monaco Grand Prix.
Right, or, you know, why the chassis just vibrated itself into a million pieces.
Exactly. And that is, that's exactly what we're seeing right now across the B2B landscape.
Mm-hmm.
We've got marketing and sales leaders buying the AI equivalent of that Ferrari engine.
Yeah.
They bolted onto these totally broken revenue processes, and then they wonder where the pipeline went.
It's honestly wild to watch.
It really is. So today we are doing a deep dive into the top go-to-market trends we've pulled from the front lines of LinkedIn over calendar weeks 16 and 17. Our goal is to figure out how to actually win that race.
Right. We want to cut through the noise of all those shiny new tools, you know, and really look at the underlying mechanics of modern revenue systems.
Yeah, because that go-kart analogy really captures the whole mission we pulled from the sources. We're seeing this massive rejection of, like, random acts of AI.
Oh, I love that phrase, random acts of AI.
Right, because the focus is completely shifted to disciplined, connected GTM architecture.
Yeah, I mean, it's no longer just a question of what software you can pull off the shelf. It's about how you engineer your baseline foundation to even be ready for those tools.
Let's actually start right there. Because if you look at the market, there's this massive, almost comical disconnect happening.
Comical, but painful.
Totally painful.
Yeah.
Like, everyone is scrambling to integrate AI into their outreach, right? And their CRMs, their content. But if you look at the actual closed won revenue, the actual pipeline,
it's completely flat.
Yes. Or even actively deteriorating.
Well, Alon even actually shared some staggering data on this exact disconnect. He pulled from a recent state of B2B GTM report, and the numbers are just crazy.
It hit me. What are the numbers?
So 85% of chief marketing officers claim AI adoption is their absolute top priority. 85%.
Okay, makes sense. Everyone wants the shiny toy.
Right. But simultaneously, 53% of GTM leaders admit that AI has had literally zero impact on their actual results.
Wait, over half? Over half are seeing zero impact from their number one priority.
Literally zero impact.
I mean, this just feels like a catastrophic failure of execution. Is it just that, you know, the AI models aren't good enough for complex B2B sales yet?
No. The models are incredibly powerful. The failure is entirely structural, just like Alon points out. It's a sequencing problem.
What do you mean by a sequencing problem?
Well, they're obsessing over the execution layer, right? Like automating sequences, generating hundreds of emails, but they completely skipped the architectural layer.
Ah, right. Building the house on sand.
Exactly. Ralph Paschen actually framed this brilliantly. He noted that AI is fundamentally just a multiplier. It has no intrinsic strategy of its own.
So it only multiplies what's already sitting in your system.
Right. So if your foundation is a mess, the AI doesn't magically clean it up. It just accelerates the mess.
That goes back to the go-kart. Right. You don't get better results. You just hit the wall at 200 miles an hour instead of 20.
You basically just scale your own inefficiencies. And Natalie Golden breaks down exactly where those structural fractures usually happen.
Okay. Where do things usually break?
She points to three specific areas: differentiation, cross-functional handoffs, and ideal customer profile, or ICP, alignment.
So basically the absolute basics of marketing.
Right. Like, if your marketing team and your sales team are working off even slightly different definitions of who the buyer is, you're in trouble.
Oh, for sure.
Or if you can't articulate why you're different from the legacy competitor in simple terms, I mean, no amount of automated outreach is going to save you.
Because the AI will just, what, send out 10,000 perfectly spelled emails pitching the complete wrong value prop?
Exactly, to the completely wrong persona.
I mean, that makes total sense. But I feel like if you talk to any CEO right now, they'll swear up and down that their differentiation is locked in. Like, they genuinely believe they have product market fit.
And that belief right there is exactly what kills early stage growth.
Really? Just the belief itself?
Yeah, because they're tricking themselves. Sangram Vajur recently analyzed over 1,000 GTM strategies. He found the number one trap CEOs fall into is mistaking problem market fit for product market fit.
Hold on, I want to double click on that. Because on the surface, solving a problem and having product market fit sound identical. Mm-hmm. What's the mechanical difference there?
It is a subtle difference, but it's totally lethal. So problem market fit means you've correctly identified that a market has a real painful problem.
Okay. Like they know it hurts and they want to fix.
Right. And because the pain is real, buyers will happily take a discovery call with you. You have validated that the pain exists.
Which to a founder feels exactly like traction.
It feels like traction, but it's completely an illusion because product market fit means your specific product is undeniably the best way to solve that pain compared to all the other alternatives.
Not just a solution, but the solution.
Exactly. Sangram points out that problem market fit gets you first meetings. Product market fit is what actually gets you closed revenue.
Wow. Okay, so a lot of companies right now are just using AI to scale their outreach when they only have that problem market fit.
Yep. They get this massive flood of early meetings. The pipeline looks super bloated and healthy, but then nothing actually closes.
Because the AI just helped them hit their structural ceiling way faster.
Exactly.
Man, you really can't automate your way around a product that's just okay.
You really can't.
Which kind of begs the question, right? If dropping AI into a bad process speeds up the crash, how do we know we're pointing the machine in the right direction?
Right, because the old way of doing things is dead.
Yeah, the old method of, you know, buying a list of 5,000 VPs of marketing and just spamming them, that causes the crash.
Which brings us to this massive shift towards signal-based GTM.
Okay, let's get into this. Signal-based.
Yeah. The era of static firmographic lists, like targeting any sauce company with 50 to 200 employees, that is effectively over.
Jean-Michel Van talked about this, right? He noted that the core question of outbound has fundamentally changed.
Exactly. We aren't asking who fits my ICP anymore. We're asking who is showing intent right now.
So it's a shift from just static targeting to dynamic timing.
Yes. Timing is everything. Hila Lauterbach advised teams to build their entire GTM stack around buyer pull signals rather than vanity metrics.
And just to clarify for everyone listening, by vanity metrics, we mean tracking things like how many emails you sent or, you know, your open rates.
Right. Because an open rate doesn't pay the server costs.
Exactly.
Tracking activity is not tracking progress. Buyer pull means you're watching the market for behavioral evidence.
Like evidence that a segment is moving toward a buying decision.
Yeah, before you ever send a single message. Like, did a target account just secure Series B funding? Did they just hire a new VP of RevOps?
Or are they surging on intent data platforms, like researching your specific category?
Exactly. Those are pull signals.
But wait, I have to push back on this definition of a signal because it feels like the industry gets incredibly loose with that term.
Oh, they definitely do.
Yeah. Georgi Vornishev actually warned about this. He pointed out that a single comment on a LinkedIn post does not magically turn someone into a warm lead.
Totally.
Like, just because I liked your post about CRM architecture doesn't mean I have $100,000 of budget to buy your software today.
Right.
So if we automate outreach based on weak signals like that, aren't we just spamming people with slightly better timing?
That is a phenomenal pushback. And honestly, George is absolutely right. Engagement baiting is not signal-based GTM. A like is an interaction. It's not an intent signal.
Right. It's just someone scrolling on their phone.
Exactly. And Jamie Walsh provides some really necessary clarity here. He argues that a high-performing GTM requires a targeting model built on buying behavior and urgency.
Urgency being the key word there.
Yes, urgency. Jamie points out that an ICP isn't just a company profile anymore. Your ICP is the exact set of conditions that create urgency for the buyer. It's all about context.
Oh, I see. So if you just scrape LinkedIn for anyone who commented on a competitor's post and drop them into an AI sequence,
you're completely ignoring their actual business reality. Real signal-based GTM requires tracking a whole constellation of signals.
A constellation? Like what?
Say a new executive hire combined with a recent drop in their own product's web traffic. Those two things together indicate a specific urgent business problem that your product might solve.
Okay, so if a single LinkedIn, like, isn't a reliable signal, but this complex combination of hiring data, funding rounds, and tech stack changes, is how on earth do you track that?
It's a lot of data.
Yeah. You can't just have a team of 20 interns manually refreshing company pages all day. You need serious infrastructure for that.
And this is exactly where we're seeing the rise of perhaps the most critical role in modern revenue teams today, the GTM engineer.
Man, I love this concept. But, you know, as Nick French pointed out, this isn't actually a brand new profession that just fell out of the sky.
Right. They've been around.
Yeah, these people have existed in our organizations for years. We just call them RevOps or growth leads.
Or that one rogue business development manager who somehow knew Python.
Exactly. The ones quietly duct taping all these bloated, disconnected SaaS tools together just to keep the pipeline from collapsing.
Yeah, they were the unsung heroes working in the back office. But now they're moving straight into the strategic driver's seat. And the financial reality really reflects this shift.
Oh, salaries are going up.
Big time. Raman K. Singh shared a recent report showing that GTM engineers who operate technical stacks are earning $50,000 more annually than their non-technical counterparts.
Wait, 50 grand more?
Yep.
Just for knowing how to connect APIs and use tools like Clay or NADN or Claude Code?
Well, it's so much more than just connecting APIs. It's about algorithmic problem solving. Think about it. The traditional soft skills of outbound, like writing a decent cold email, that's being commoditized by AI.
Yeah, an AI can write a better email in 2 seconds anyway.
Exactly. But what AI cannot do is architect the entire system that tells the email engine who to write to, what specific business logic to reference, and when to send it.
Okay, that makes sense. The architect is the valuable piece.
Right. Hernan Gimeno clarified the true mandate of the GTM engineer. Their job isn't just to run cold outbound campaigns. Their job is to find the most expensive friction in the revenue motion and engineer it out of existence.
Expensive friction. Okay, give me a tangible example of that. What does that actually look like on the sales floor?
Okay, think about a highly paid account executive prepping for a critical discovery call with a big enterprise prospect.
Okay.
Historically, that AE might spend like 45 minutes just stitching together context.
Oh yeah, reading 10K financial reports.
Scanning press releases, looking at the LinkedIn profiles of the entire buying committee.
And trying to map all of that back to their own product's value prop.
Yeah.
Which is incredibly expensive friction.
Exactly, because that's 45 minutes they aren't actively selling or negotiating. So Hernan asks, what if that prep brief just wrote itself in 90 seconds?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A GTM engineer uses tools like Clay and Claude to build a system where the CRM automatically ingests the prospect's latest 10K, cross-references it against your company's proprietary sales methodology, and then surfaces the three most provocative discovery questions.
Directly onto the AE's dashboard before the call even starts.
Exactly. You aren't just giving the seller a new tool. You're literally giving them their hours back.
Okay, I definitely see the power in that. But, and I have a serious concern here, with all these new GTM engineers suddenly getting access to dozens of powerful tools.
Like the automation nodes and scraping tools.
Yeah, the AI logic layers and all that. Aren't we risking the creation of Frankenstacks?
Oh, the Frankenstack.
Right, where you bolt 30 different microtools together with like super fragile Zapier connections, and then the whole revenue engine just breaks the second LinkedIn updates its interface.
Or Google changes an algorithm, yeah.
It feels like building a skyscraper on a foundation of toothpicks.
It does, and that is the exact fear most RevOps leaders have right now. But the market is actually self-correcting against the Frankenstack.
Really? How so?
David Turvitz observed that rather than fragmenting into hundreds of disconnected tools, the modern tech stack is rapidly consolidating.
Oh, so fewer tools doing more.
Yes. We're moving away from brittle connectors and moving toward native intelligence systems.
Ah, okay. So it's like a universal translator versus someone who actually speaks the language fluently.
That is a perfect analogy.
Right, because if data has to be translated and passed between five different tools, context gets lost, connections break. But if the data natively flows into a system that has an AI model built directly into its core, it's fluent.
That is a brilliant way to phrase it. It stops feeling like a bunch of connected software and starts feeling like a single unified intelligence layer. Chris Salazar really reinforced this by bringing up Dan Rosenthal's concept of the GTM flywheel.
Okay, how does the flywheel work in this context?
Well, the ultimate test of a modern tech stack isn't how many tools you have. It's whether your system compounds intelligence over time.
Compounding intelligence, meaning it learns.
Exactly. Does what you learn from yesterday's failed outbound campaign automatically update the scoring model to sharpen tomorrow's targeting?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if your tools aren't natively talking to each other and adjusting the logic based on market feedback, you don't actually have a GTM system. You just have a bloated tech stack with extra administrative steps.
It's like having a checklist versus a flywheel.
Yeah.
If it doesn't learn, it's just a static checklist.
Exactly.
So let's ground this in reality for a second. We've talked a lot about the high-level architecture, the urgent signals, the engineers.
Sure, big picture stuff.
Right. But what does this actually look like for the marketing and sales professionals executing on the floor? Like, how do AI-native workflows change a Tuesday morning for a regular rep?
It fundamentally changes their relationship with their technology. Andrew Berger shared an incredible real-world example of this.
What did he do?
Instead of a top-down corporate mandate where leadership forces a new, rigid process on the team, he took a totally different approach. He connected a powerful AI model, Claude, in this case, directly to his team's existing stack.
Like Salesforce and Gong.
Salesforce, Gong, Notion, all of it. And then he just let the reps and account executives build their own workflows on top of it.
Wait, the salespeople built their own automation?
Yes, through natural language.
Uh-huh.
And he reported that it resulted in the biggest performance lift he has ever seen in any GTM organization.
Because the reps actually know where their own friction is.
Exactly. They built workflows for agentic prospecting, meaning the AI actively searches the web for specific trigger events without even being prompted.
That's insane.
They built workflows that instantly generate highly customized pitch decks tailored to a specific prospect's industry terminology in under 5 minutes.
So they essentially built their own personalized chief of staff.
Right, one that listens to their sales calls and automatically extracts the deal strategy.
That is wild. And, you know, this level of execution isn't even restricted to business hours anymore.
Not at all.
Look at what Archie Sharma is doing. He talked about building this custom automation workflow he calls Zenflow.
Oh, Zenflow. Yeah, this is cool.
Before his team even opens their laptops at 9 a.m., this AI agent has already pulled every single new inbound contact from the last 24 hours.
While they were sleeping.
Exactly. It cross-references their email domains, scores each one on ICP fit based on deep firmographics, tags the high-priority leads in the CRM, and drafts highly personalized outreach emails.
Just sitting right there in the rep's draft folders.
Yes. By the time the human sits down with their morning coffee, the entire triage process is complete.
It allows the human to start their day at the point of absolute highest leverage.
Right. But I have to ask the uncomfortable question here.
Let's hear it.
If AI is doing all the account research, right?
Yeah.
If it's scoring the leads, and if it's drafting the emails in our own voice, are we losing our empathy? Is B2B sales just going to devolve into robots talking to other robots? Like, your AI reads my 10K, drafts an email, and sends it to my AI, which summarizes it and auto-replies with a polite rejection.
It's the ultimate dystopian fear everyone harbors right now. But Liza Adams offered a perspective that completely flips that assumption on its head.
Really? What did she say?
She found that relying on AI daily actually made her significantly more empathetic and human in her interactions.
Wait, how does offloading your thinking to a machine make you more human?
Because she isn't offloading her thinking, she is offloading her processing. She uses the AI as a debate partner.
A debate partner.
Okay. Yeah. Before she walks into a room or jumps on a high-stakes call, she uses the AI to simulate different perspectives, to actively challenge her assumptions about the buyer's pain points.
Oh, I see.
When the AI handles the exhausting heavy lifting of gathering context and organizing data, the human brain isn't fatigued. It is fully present. It can focus entirely on emotional intelligence, reading the room, and genuine connection.
Ah, so it just clears the cognitive load.
Exactly. And Eric Stanley added to this beautifully. He pointed out that elite GTM engineering clears the runway so that top-tier sales reps can focus strictly on what machines cannot do.
Which is exercising human judgment.
Yes, human judgment, structuring highly complex multi-stakeholder deals and building trust. He used B2B finance as an example, but it applies everywhere. In enterprise sales, the relationship isn't just a nice-to-have wrapper around the product.
The relationship is the product.
Bingo. AI doesn't close a million-dollar enterprise deal. It removes the paperwork so the human can look the buyer in the eye and build trust.
That's a great way to put it.
But, and this is a critical caveat we have to establish, we cannot blindly trust the machine to do that prep work flawlessly.
Oh, yeah. The AI failure modes.
Right. Leszek Lammel runs his entire GTM advisory business using AI models, but he issued a vital warning about this.
Are we just talking about standard hallucinations here, like the AI inventing a fake competitor or something?
It's actually much more insidious than obvious hallucinations. AI can invent highly logical sounding buying signals that are completely false in the real world.
What do you mean?
Well, Lessig gave a great example. He was having the AI build a scoring rubric for intent signals, right? And the AI confidently flagged founders publicly posting on LinkedIn that they need help with outbound sales as a high intent signal.
I mean, logically, that makes perfect sense. If they post they need help, they're a lead.
Exactly. The logic checks out on paper. But anyone who actually works in B2B knows that founders almost never publicly admit their outbound is failing on a public forum like LinkedIn.
Oh, right. It's an ego thing.
It's a completely fabricated signal. But the AI happily added it to the scoring model, which means the system would be endlessly searching for a trigger event that doesn't exist in reality.
Wow.
Furthermore, Lessig noted a major blind spot AI has with temporal data. Basically, how it understands time.
Temporal data.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't know what day it is.
It struggles with the decay curve of a buying signal.
Decay curve. Okay, unpack that for me.
Let's say your tracking software shows a company just raised $50 million. That is a massive urgency signal.
Oh, absolutely. Huge budget unlocked.
But what if they raised it 90 days ago? To an AI, the binary fact remains. They raise money, score them 100 out of 100.
Right.
But a human GTM expert knows that by day 90, the budget from that funding round has already been allocated. The buying window closed 2 months ago. AI treats timing triggers as binary, completely ignoring the natural decay curve of urgency.
Wow. So if you just hook up an AI agent to your CRM and say, go, it's going to confidently chase expired signals and hallucinate buyer behaviors.
Absolutely. Which is why Lessig emphasizes that the real competitive moat in GTM right now isn't merely having access to advanced tools like Claude or N8N.
Because everyone has access to those.
Exactly. The true competitive advantage is having the human muscle, the deep domain expertise to verify what the machine is doing. You need human judgment to catch when the AI is confidently, logically wrong.
Man, this has been an incredibly clarifying deep dive for you listeners out there.
It really is a fascinating time.
Yeah, we've trace this entire evolution happening right now. We started with the very real danger of taking a messy foundation and just amplifying it with AI.
The go-kart.
The go-kart, exactly. We explore the necessity of moving away from static targeting to tracking genuine buying urgency. We look at the rise of the GTM engineer who builds the native flywheels, and finally, how AI workflows are fundamentally designed to let humans get back to the deeply human work of selling.
It is a complete paradigm shift. We are moving from a volume-based game to an intelligence-based game. And, you know, as we synthesize all the insights from these practitioners, I want to leave you with one final, deeply provocative thought from Lomit Patel.
Okay, let's hear it.
We've spent this entire time talking about systems, signals, and engineering. But Lomit points out a critical flaw in the underlying psychology of most historical GTM strategies.
Which is?
Historically, the assumption was simple. If you capture attention, you earn trust.
Right. The old billboard model.
Yeah.
Like, if you are big enough and loud enough to interrupt my day, you must be a credible vendor.
Exactly. But in the modern SaaS era, which is completely saturated with AI-generated content, that assumption is dead. Buyers are no longer struggling to discover tools.
No, they are drowning in tools. Mm-hmm. Every vendor looks exactly the same.
Right. What buyers are actually struggling with is deciding which vendor is credible enough to risk their budget, their data, and their professional reputation on.
Because AI has made it virtually free for a two-person startup to spin up a flawless website, generate 500 white papers, and send 10,000 hyper-personalized emails. They sound exactly like an enterprise giant.
The cost of looking professional has dropped to zero.
Yeah, it's wild.
Precisely. So credibility, not attention, is now the sole determining factor of whether a complex sale even begins. AI has democratized outreach. Everyone's marketing is getting louder, faster, and more personalized.
So what's the takeaway for the listener?
The ultimate question you have to ask yourself about your own revenue architecture is this. Is your go-to-market engine engineered simply to generate more noise in a deafening market, or is it meticulously engineered to build undeniable trust?
Is it engineered to build undeniable trust?
Yeah.
That is the exact question you need to bring to your next leadership meeting. Because if you are just using these incredible tools to yell louder, your buyers have already tuned you out.
Exactly right. Fix the foundation, track the real urgency, and use the technology to prove your credibility, not just your existence.
I couldn't agree more. And that brings us to the end of today's deep dive. If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, field marketing, channel marketing, MarTech, social selling, and AI in B2B marketing.
Thank you for joining us as we unpack the underlying mechanics of modern GTM.
Thank you so much for listening. Take a hard look at that go-kart before you buy the Ferrari engine. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss a deep dive, and we will catch you on the next one. Keep engineering that trust.